Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Tuesday, December 3rd. I'm Elisa Music reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Eureka actively planning for its affordable housing needs. Vocality Community Credit Union to host town hall on merger with Community First. And Fort Bragg slashes homeless arrests by two-thirds with care response unit. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. California needs 2 to 3 million new homes to address both housing demand and affordability issues. The city of Eureka is moving to address their share of the state's housing shortage. Kelly Lincoln reports.
The city of Eureka, California has a plan to build over 300 low-income and very low-income housing units by 2028. If the federal funding doesn't get pulled, in order to come into compliance with California state law. In 2017, the California legislature began requiring jurisdictions to submit to the state for an audit of their progress toward meeting housing goals, and if cities or counties fail to meet their housing requirements, the state can take more aggressive action, including withholding state funding in other areas like transportation. Or the state may even take over local planning responsibilities until the problems are resolved. As a result, Eureka City Council has been working on a large number of housing projects with a variety of partners. Many of these projects in the low-income and very low-income categories involve the Eureka City Council's decision to sell its free public parking lots around Old Town and downtown to build affordable housing. Measure F aimed to reject this business district location, but Measure F was defeated, and the city is moving forward with its housing plans. Eureka needs to build 231 very low-income units. This means they must encourage the development of housing that can be affordably rented to people who earn between $30,000 to $40,000 a year. Low-income units are aimed at those who earn between $40,000 and $66,000 a year. Eureka needs 147 low-income units.
If anybody who's tried to rent or buy recently in Humboldt County is, you know, there's a huge sticker shock. Like, it is crazy how much a one-bedroom rents for right now. And as a local government, what we can do is just try to get as much housing supply built as possible.
Eureka's Development Services Director, Kristen Kenyon, gave us a rundown of Eureka's many housing projects that are in the pipelines during a phone interview with KMUD News.
We have the Link Housing. They're developing on three separate city parking lots, one at 8th and G, one at 6th and M, and one at Sunny and Myrtle. And those, in total, it's 90 units. I think it breaks down to like 31, 31, and 28. They're all affordable except for a manager's unit on each of those. And they have submitted a building permit. They have all their funding. And so we expect them to finish construction within the next 2 years. And be open for people to live there, which is really exciting.
The Eureka Transit Authority is working with Danco Construction on a project called the Earth Center, which will also be built on Old Town property currently being used for public parking.
The Earth Center, that's the parking lots at 3rd and G and 3rd and H. They've just submitted an application for design review approval. Their project is going to have 46 units, three stories of housing above the transit center. So the ground floor is going to be a transit center, and then it's going to have a bunch of retail spaces that they'll lease out. It's a partnership between the city owns the parking lots, and then Danco's going to do the building, and then they're going to retain the housing, and then the ground floor is going to be owned and operated by Humboldt Transit Authority.
Kenyon said that a feasibility study is going to be conducted to determine whether a parking structure is needed to replace the many parking spaces that are being converted into housing.
We are, you know, HTA has funding to do a feasibility study for a parking structure. And they also are pursuing funding for autonomous vehicle shuttle, which is really cool and crazy sounding, to go around Old Town and pick people up from the further away parking lots, you know, and take them downtown and around. Because we have, for instance, the parking lots across from the Adorney Center, they're have at their peak occupancy, they're at an occupancy of like 6% at the most.
Nearly 90 units will have a view of Humboldt Bay just above the Bayshore Mall.
Sunset Heights is the property that the city swapped for parking lots with Pearson Company. That's between Harris and Henderson above Broadway. That's Rural Communities Development Corporation. They're doing 88 units, and they've just submitted for a design review.
The Housing Authority of Eureka has begun planning to increase the density on many of its existing projects.
There's 196 units existing. They're adding 154 units for a total of 350 units.
Okay.
And this is over 12 sites in the city.
However, the funding for the Eureka Housing Authority's plans is not yet in place.
That one, it's less certain because they haven't secured their necessary financing yet. With affordable housing, it takes a while because of the financing component. You know, you get your site, and then you work through your permitting, and then you hope that you get that financing to finish it and submit your building plans. So,
the Wiat Tribe has a transitional housing project for youth going in at the site of the former Children's Mental Health Building. The Wiat Tribe is also planning two other projects, one with 52 units for elders and another with 41 units for families.
The Wiat Tribe and their partner, Dishkamu Humboldt, the land trust, the city awarded them parking lots at 5th and D and 6th and L to construct housing. They are just getting started now. They've been preoccupied with HomeKey project that they're working on in Eureka, which they're working through the building permit process on right now. It's an old office building that you see on the right side when you're getting on the bridge to Samoa. That's going to be more of supportive housing for youth, so it's not going to be distinct units. It'll be, you know, rooms and shared living.
Meanwhile, Eureka is also striving to increase owner-occupied housing at an affordable rate. Eureka City Council is employing the strategy of decreasing lot sizes to make home ownership more affordable.
They're really interested in having more owner-occupied housing.
The 2019 general plan update already decreased the minimum lot size in Eureka, and further reductions in minimum lot sizes will be considered during the housing plan update set to begin in the new year.
We comprehensively updated our zoning code in 2019, and we made a lot of changes that are allowing development to occur, infill development that couldn't happen before because of code barriers, like large minimum lot sizes and not allowing people to have access via their alley or requiring a lot of parking or yard space.
Citing a study by Bellotti.berkeley.edu, Kenyon says that an overwhelming majority of California planning prioritizes single-family housing over more dense housing options.
They averaged 78% of their residential land zoned for single-family housing, and 91 California jurisdictions have reserved over 95% or more of their residential land for single-family zoning. And usually in California, single-family zoning is a minimum lot size of 5,000 or 6,000 square feet. And when you do that, you can't support transit. allowing for smaller lots and a diversity of housing types, you are able to support transit. You're able to support, you know, your corner store, your coffee shop. You make things so much more walkable and community oriented. Frankly, we need, because of demographic changes, you know, we have an aging population. We have a lot of people who are just two people households or, you know, don't have kids or single person households. And there's just, people want to live near jobs and services, you know, they want to be able to walk to a coffee shop or whatever. So,
in addition to all these publicly funded housing projects, the Eureka City Council is holding a hearing at its meeting tonight, Tuesday, December 3rd at 6 p.m. on a privately funded project that will combine some housing with a medical clinic near Henderson Center, if approved. I'm Kelly Lincoln, reporting on housing progress taking shape in the Humboldt County seat for KMUD News.
Vocality Community Credit Union, started in Southern Humboldt, has announced plans to combine forces with Community First Credit Union, creating what they say will be a stronger financial cooperative to serve over 70,000 members.
Good afternoon. This is Pat Neighbors, CEO of Vocality Community Credit Union here in Garberville and office in Ukiah as well. Vocality Community Credit Union and Community First Credit Union of Santa Rosa, California, have announced our intent to merge our two credit unions for the benefit of our members.
The merger between these two credit unions is currently under regulatory review, with plans to put the proposal to a vote of Vocality's membership once approved. Pat Neighbors, CEO of Vocality, says this partnership was carefully selected.
It took us quite a bit of time to find the right fit partner to do this merger, and we're tickled to death with Community First as our recommended partner for merger.
The decision to merge comes as Vocality's local community has faced significant economic challenges in recent years, particularly due to the legalization of cannabis. Neighbors explains how this industry's impact was not fully understood.
I don't think any of us really understood the depth and breadth that the cannabis industry actually lent to our county as a whole. I don't think any of us really recognized the value of the dollars that our cannabis industry were bringing into our retail establishments, our financial institutions, our county coffers.
This black swan event, as Neighbors describe it, led to significant economic turmoil for the region. Recognizing the need to be proactive, Vocality's board set key criteria for selecting a merger partner.
The board determined what were deal breakers. And those deal breakers were, we need to make sure that our Garberville branch stays. That was an important answer to our board, that whomever we chose to go with, they had to guarantee we were going to have a Garberville branch. And then they needed to guarantee that our folks were going to be able to keep their jobs.
Community First Credit Union emerged as the ideal partner, offering the stability and resources Vocality was seeking. Neighbors outlines the benefits members can expect.
They have trust and will references available to folks. They've got insurance references available for folks. They have a broader array of mortgage type loans that we're able to do. They have VA and FHA, first-time home buyer, things like that. So basically, the membership will be receiving more products and services being delivered by the same friendly faces they've been dealing with for decades.
This includes expanded digital banking capabilities, enhanced lending options, and continued access to the Garberville branch location. To share more details, Vocality is hosting a town hall meeting for members on December 4th, where the CEO of Community First Credit Union will also be present.
So a town hall available to the Vocality Community Credit Union members will be meeting at the Mateel Community Center on December 4th at 6 p.m. Doors will open at 5:30 and we'll start the program at 6 p.m.
Members are encouraged to submit questions in advance to ensure their concerns are addressed. Neighbors emphasizes Vocality's commitment to the community and the exciting opportunities this merger will bring.
We hope that everybody that is interested would come out on December 4th and learn more. And that if they have questions, they can also reach out to me directly. They can call the credit union line, and my extension is 150. If they'd like to come in and have a personal meeting with me, they can give a ring or contact the credit union and make an appointment to come in and talk with me. And the gang here is very excited. The staff is excited about it. The management team's excited, and the board has done a great job of finding a great partner for us to move forward with.
With regulatory approval pending, the merger between Vocality Community Credit Union and Community First Credit Union is expected to be completed in 2025. Under the Community First name, the combined organization will serve members across 12 branches, led by Scott Johnson as CEO and Pat Neighbors as Chief Strategy Officer. KMN News will continue to follow this story as it develops. Turning to Mendocino, a zero-tolerance policy on homeless encampments in Fort Bragg has paradoxically reduced homeless arrests thanks to the innovative efforts of a small care response unit within the police department. KZYX's Elise Cox reports.
It's been almost 6 months since the U.S. Supreme Court upheld the constitutionality of local ordinances that banned camping in public places, prompting enforcement of ordinances in cities like San Francisco and Los Angeles, and also condemnation by homeless advocates who say local governments are criminalizing homelessness. But as the experience of Fort Bragg shows, enforcing a zero-tolerance approach to camping can be done effectively and compassionately and can lead to fewer contacts between police officers and the unhoused population and far fewer arrests. When Captain Tom O'Neill and Mayor Bernie Norvell talk about Fort Bragg's Care Response Unit, known by its initials as CRU, they start with the years 2018 and 2019, when homeless encampments dotted the city and disruptive behavior led to more than 1,000 calls for service per year. Here's Captain O'Neill.
A lot of the complaints were people sleeping in door fronts, leaving trash downtown, drinking downtown, fights downtown. Issues at Safeway, grocery stores, Harvest Market, kind of just nuisance and vagrancy issues.
And so we're getting these calls, and what did the police do in response?
At the time, we didn't have a lot of tools to deal with it. They're minor crimes. They are misdemeanors in the state of California, but they were not things that we could really transport to jail unless we had multiple in a row, and even transporting to jail wasn't solving the problem.
O'Neill was able to secure a grant from the California Department of Healthcare Services. The original funding was for about $220,000, and it enabled the Fort Bragg Police Department to hire two CRU members.
Police Chief Neil Cervenka measures CRU's effectiveness in terms of calls for service and arrests.
For example, in 2018, almost 49% of the total arrests that Fort Bragg Police Department made were of people experiencing homelessness. So about half of the work that they did involved the homeless, which means, and a lot of those crimes were social crimes or, petty crimes that could be, if they weren't in that situation, they wouldn't be committing those crimes. So it really took officers off the street. In 2019, that went up to 54%.
CRU was put in place during the pandemic. By 2023, the first full year of post-pandemic CRU activity, the change was evident. The two CRU team members were on the street, getting to know the unhoused population as individuals and helping them access services.
So that was the first full year of the CRU program. That percentage dropped down to 28%. And then this year, to date, we're down under 18% on average. So of total arrests from 2019, where we were at over 54% of total arrests were of homeless people, year to date in 2024, we're at 17.8%. So that's a dramatic, dramatic shift that the community feels, that the police officers feel, because they're no longer dealing with petty crimes or social issues.
So arrest numbers can drop just because you don't make arrests. So tell me about the calls for service.
So in 2022, we had 1,282 calls for service involving the homeless. In 2023, that dropped to 1,116, which is a 13% drop in a year.
What's not revealed in that statistic is how many calls can be handled by crew members themselves or with minimal officer assistance, freeing up the officers for police work. Mayor Bernie Norvell, who worked closely with Captain O'Neill to establish the program, says while crew may outwardly resemble traditional homeless outreach programs, it's far more effective.
What we do is we are proactive and we talk to you and build relationships till you get to a point to where you're asking us to come indoors and take part in the services. And we're going to hold your hand from the very first time we meet you until you're a productive member of society. And I think that's the big difference. And it's not cheap. It's a lot. It takes a lot of staff time and a lot of hours. But what you can't argue with are the results. And I think you can't argue with how the rest of the state and the nation's going about it either and say that it doesn't necessarily work for them.
So what is CREW? Captain O'Neill explains.
Prior to this, let's say we had an individual that was causing issues in the downtown business district. Maybe they were experiencing a mental health crisis, and so they were talking to themselves or they were yelling at themselves. Obviously, law enforcement would go down. We would evaluate them for a mental health hold under the 5150 Welfare Institution Code. Oftentimes, those individuals don't meet that threshold, and we would basically ask them to kind of please quiet down, or at some point it would elevate to where they had committed a crime, some low-level misdemeanor, and then they would be arrested. Today, a lot of these individuals, unless they're completely brand new to town, the care response unit knows who they are by name. They know their history, their background. There's a lot of proactive work where they go out and try to contact these individuals first thing in the morning. And now they will typically do what we call a dual response, where they'll go out with an officer. If they're comfortable, they'll talk to the person by themselves. Or I would say probably three quarters of the time now they go out and handle the call by themselves without a police officer because they know who the individual is.
Basically, they show an interest and they care, and it makes all the difference. For KZYX News, I'm Elise Cox.
In state news, a new study shows that aquaculture uses far more wild fish as feedstock than prior estimates, calling the sustainability of farmed fish into question. Suzanne Potter brings you the details.
Farmed fish is supposed to be more sustainable than wild-caught fish, but a new study finds that aquaculture uses far more fish as feedstock than previously thought. Researchers found that the fish-in, fish-out ratios for aquaculture are off base by between 27 and 307%. Spencer Roberts is a researcher from the University of Miami who says it's a myth that aquaculture alleviates pressure on wild fish populations.
It is a shift from these larger fish that we like to eat, like the salmon and tuna and cod, to these smaller fish like anchovies, sardines, whiting, that are then being ground up into feed.
New York University also took part in the study, which took into account previously overlooked sources of wild fish in fish meal, such as trimmings and byproducts from wild-caught fish and bycatch fish that are killed. The fish caught for fish meal now encompasses around a fifth of the global catch by biomass. Roberts says the massive demand for fish meal is exacerbating poverty and hunger in coastal communities in Africa.
These subsistence fishermen have to go further out to sea to catch less fish, risking their lives, sometimes being rammed and killed by these industrial fishing vessels. The malnutrition in these communities has spiked, and so it's actually driving people to emigrate from their homes in West Africa.
Fish farming and crustacean farming consume approximately 10 times the calories and 5 times the protein that they produce. They also note the impact of a large amount of land-based farming, where seed meal and soy are grown for use in fish meal. This story was produced with original reporting from Sophie Cavaney for Sentient. This is Suzanne Potter reporting. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
State lawmakers kick off a special session requested by Governor Newsom to shore up the state for expected legal fights with Trump. KPFA's Max Pringle reports.
Democratic Assemblymember Jesse Gabriel is chair of the Assembly Budget Committee. He introduced legislation to set aside $25 million for legal fees. He told reporters recently that the state has learned the lessons of the first Trump administration.
This is to be ready in the case that they break the law, that they violate the U.S. Constitution, that they are doing things that are unlawful or unconstitutional, and we're not going to get caught flat-footed.
State Assembly Speaker Robert Rivas of Salinas was reelected as Assembly Speaker. He said during his acceptance address that the state will be fighting hard to preserve its values.
This task is urgent. Because this new administration in Washington, they're going to tell us, they're going to claim that you can only lift people up by tearing others down.
President-elect Trump repeatedly attacked California on the campaign trail, threatening to withhold disaster aid over Governor Newsom's water-restricting policy. Governor Newsom says Trump 2.0 is likely to be more aggressive in going after California on things like promoting renewable energy, reproductive rights, and immigrants' rights. Newsom spoke to reporters last week at a Fresno event promoting a state rebate for electric vehicles.
We had the experience with Donald Trump. Don't fall prey to somehow this is some new day. Listen to what these guys are saying and telling you. Look at what they're prepared to do day one.
According to the Newsom administration, the state of California sued the federal government 122 times during the first Trump administration in an effort to beat back Trump's attacks.
He vandalized our progress. He vandalized our programs. He broke the law. We reacted to the assault. It wasn't a proactive litigation strategy. It was a reactive strategy. I hope there's not one lawsuit with Trump administration. As I said, open hand, not a closed fist.
Trump vowed to carry out mass deportations once he's in office. He also made the transgender rights movement a focus of his campaign.
On day one, I will revoke Joe Biden's cruel policies on so-called gender-affirming care. Ridiculous. A process that includes giving kids puberty blockers, mutating their physical appearance, and ultimately performing surgery on minor children.
It's unclear how Trump could impact gender-affirming care at the federal level other than through federal funding, given that health care-related decisions are generally handled at the state level. Assembly Speaker Robert Rivas said the California state government will be ready to respond.
If LGBTQ people come under attack, if hardworking immigrants are targeted, if women's reproductive freedom is threatened, we will fight back with everything we have. The country looks to California for leadership, and we will continue to lead.
State lawmakers swore in more than two dozen new members. Meanwhile, Republican legislators blasted Newsom and the Democrats' special session, saying it promotes political division. For KPFA News, I'm Max Pringle.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Katie Phillips, and thanks to our reporters, Kelly Lincoln, Elise Cox, and Max Pringle. KMUD News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org, SoundCloud, Instagram, and Facebook. That's where you can see related stories, links, and videos. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting from the KMUD studio in Redway, I'm Lisa Music.